Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com. Hey everybody, today's guest is Chrissy Costanza, lead vocalist for the Poughkeepsie, New York rock band Against the Current. Together we dissect the inspiration, writing, recording, and release of their fan favorite, Wasteland, taken from the 2016 debut album, In Our Bones. Chrissy talked about the arduous writing sessions that led up to the recording of the album, how at times she was disillusioned by the process of it all, and how ultimately she channeled that into the lyrical content for Wasteland. She touched on the importance that both producer Andrew Goldstein and co-writer Sipe had on the song fully coming together. We both agree that it's the fans that ultimately make a song or a band a success, that loyal following of people who buy the records, concert tickets, and merchandise. They are the ones who truly dictate your staying power in the music business. And who knew that all the recording studios in Los Angeles were once strip clubs? Well, that's our theory anyways. For all this and much more, don't you dare go anywhere.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
You may not know this, but I actually, your record label, Fueled by Ramen, I'm going to hold this up for you. This was the first release ever for Fueled by Ramen. It was a Chinese food takeout container.
That's awesome.
There's a cassette in there, and there's a menu with all the releases at the time. That label was started out of my apartment probably around the time you were born in 1996.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was 95, so I was fresh 1 year old.
You were a freshman. But yes, just wanted to bring that up to you that we have a little weird shared history here, although a quarter century apart. But the band Against the Current formed in Poughkeepsie, New York in 2011. Poughkeepsie is a very interesting place. I've been there. I played the Chants before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, and not only is there the Chants, but upstairs in that venue, there's the little venue where, you know, when you're starting out, you play.
And, I believe it's called the Loft.
The Loft? Oh, yeah. There's a pole right smack dab in the middle of the stage. It's a whole vibe. You have to load in, is up a flight of super narrow, creaky stairs. Like, it's a vibe.
I never played the Loft, but I saw after our show one night, this band from New Jersey, a metal band called Overkill, played up there. And I don't know how they got the drum set in the room. The drum set alone pretty much filled that place. But Poughkeepsie, New York is especially that area, is a very interesting place. So the fact that you guys formed your band there was of interest to me. You gained a sizable online following after posting covers of various popular songs on YouTube. And of course, we just talked about Fueled by Ramen, which you signed to in 2015 after releasing 2 self-released EPs.
Yeah.
Your debut album came out in May of 2016. That was followed by Past Lives in September 2018. You have 4 EPs total, with a 5th one slated for release on July 23rd, 2021, called Fever. And that's your first EP on Fueled by Ramen. Congratulations.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting too. It's kind of a weird release as well, just because it's being released as an EP, but then there's actually a second EP that's coming as well, that's going to complete the title. So Fever is only the first half of the full album title. And so once the second EP comes out, it's going to be re-rolled together on all the DSPs as a full 14 song album.
And I'm finding that with a lot of more no pun intended, current artists, you know, bands that bands that have been around the last 10 years or so, you look at their discography and it's crazy. It used to be bands had 5, 6, 7, 8 albums and 1 or 2 EPs. And now it's reversed because we're in such a singles driven market that I went and looked and found it interesting. You have 5 EPs to 2 albums, but I guess this is going to kind of turn itself into an album.
Yeah, it will. And I think part of the reason we love albums, like we grew up with, you know, with bands that released albums and where the album was the most precious thing that a band could do, especially your first album. I remember Will, my drummer, would always repeat this one quote that he had heard over and over. You have your whole life to make your first album. You have your whole life to make your first album. And then you usually only have like 2 years for your second album because your label's like, let's get it out there. So yeah, albums are such a precious thing, but this year, it's just such a bizarre year this year and last year. And without being able to tour, I think people are trying to get creative as well and find ways to produce more content with less or with the same amount of songs. So for us, this was a really fun way of doing it because instead of doing 1 album and 3 music videos, you know, 3 songs that get released individually and whatnot, we've already done 4 videos for just the 1 EP. And then we'll do another 4 for the 2nd EP. So more songs kind of get their moment, but we still get to have the creative vision of an entire album at the end of it. Because I still think like the idea of just like these branded eras for bands are so, I don't know, they're so special. They're special for me. They're special for fans. Like some of my favorite bands, you know, not everyone listens to a band for their entire life if the band's around for a long time. You know, as the band gets older, they change. Sometimes you fall into a band later. Sometimes you love a band earlier in their time. And I just think not only is the band itself special, but so are the individual eras within the band. And I think if we got rid of albums completely, we would just lose that. So I kind of like that we're trying to have our cake and eat it too here, where we're releasing the 2 EPs, but it's coming together as an album.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I definitely feel the same way. And our producer and I, Chris, were talking before you came on about that very thing. Is the art of the album is something that's still very important to me. And I'm glad to hear you say that. You joined the band in 2011, and Dan on guitar and Will drums. They were already had Against the Current. So how did that come about? How did you end up finding these guys or finding you?
Yeah, they weren't called Against the Current yet. They actually had a name. They were called That Same Sunrise, which we are very happily changed once I joined the band. But they had been in bands together since they were 9 years old, which is crazy. They lived 2 blocks away from each other growing up. Dan moved, you know, in 2 blocks away from Will. They met in school and Will was like, hey, you should play guitar. And so he picked up a guitar and they started bands. My favorite band name they ever had was when they were 11, they had a band name called Nightlight Brigade, which I think is incredibly self-aware for 11-year-olds, like to name a band. Cause you know, when you're 11, you're like, no, I don't use a nightlight. I'm tough. And I thought that was so funny, but we kind of actually met over MySpace a little bit, half through a mutual friend and half through MySpace, right at the tail end of MySpace, really. I had a MySpace page that I had just like one little GarageBand demo I had recorded on. And our mutual friend was like, hey, to the guys, they were like, I know this girl, you guys don't have a singer right now. Like, I know this girl that sings, like you should check her out. And yeah, so I walked into my mom's bedroom at like 11 PM one night, you know, like 15 years old. And I come from a pretty like conservative family, you know, like they weren't like overly strict, but you know, it was pretty clean. You know, there's very low tolerance for any bullshit. And I remember walking in and being like, hey mom, like I met these guys in a band on the internet. Will you drive me 1.5 hours north to Poughkeepsie, a place that I had never heard of, so I can go meet them and maybe be in a band? And my mom's face was just like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, you just threw like 400 red flags all at once.
Yeah. But you know what ended up happening is the guys came down to me. Dan's mom drove them down to New Jersey and they hung out at the house for the day. And my mom met Dan's mom. And yeah, and we played some covers on an acoustic guitar in the basement to see if we would vibe. And it kind of just went from there. I was technically auditioning for the band the first time I went to like band practice. And they never told me if I got the gig. So still to this day, we don't really know if I'm in the band or not.
Yeah, well, two full length records and five EPs. You know, you're doing something right.
You never know; they could turn around and be like, "Hey, man, it's just not going to work. We don't think it's a good fit."
So, when researching for this episode, I came across that you play piano. Obviously, you sing. Is piano your only instrument, or do you have other instruments that you play?
I actually play guitar better than I play piano. I don't play either well, though. I started playing piano when I was about 7, and then when I was 9, I was just like, guitar is so cool. It's the coolest instrument. I want to learn guitar. And my mom compromised with me getting me an acoustic to start. She got me a 3/4 size guitar and a Big Baby Taylor, but like a 3/4 size one. And to this day, it still fits because I am very small. So 3/4 size is just my size in general. And then I remember getting my first electric guitar, though, and being like, lit up my life. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever touched. And it was like a Squire. It was like $200.
That's awesome. Do you find yourself gravitating more towards guitar when you're writing, or do you leave it up to Dan and Will to write, or do you actually I write lyrics, write songs, both?
So yeah, I'm definitely more of a top liner. I'm more lyrics and melodies. When I met the guys at that point, they were so far ahead of me musically, but they weren't vocally. So I kind of just, we all fell into our respective roles. They're the combination of the two of them. Will's a phenomenal writer and producer, and Dan really compliments him in so many ways. So for me, it's more like if I'm looking for intervals or something, I'll use a keyboard. If I'm like, what would be a cool interval to start this chorus? Like if the pre is here, like what would be an interesting jump to get to the chorus? Yeah. So more so that, but I'm usually writing with them or like over some other pre-existing progression.
Okay. So because the song I noticed was credited, and the song we're going to preview today, mm-hmm. discuss today, is called Wasteland, was mm-hmm. credited to yourself, Daniel, Will, and of course, Andrew Goldstein, who was yep. one of the producers on the record. And we've talked about Andrew on the show before. He produced the song Monsters from All Time Low, and yep. I had Alex from All Time Low on here. And of course, Andrew, who is also known as, is it Friend, FRND?
Yeah, Friend.
He's written and produced for Katy Perry, Britney Spears, Linkin Park, Demi Lovato, you name it. And yeah. of course, you also had Tommy English, who I did some research. Mm-hmm. I did some research on Tommy, and he's done a bunch of stuff for Andrew McMahon, Kay Flay, who we've had on the show, Carly yeah. Rae Jepsen, and Adam Lambert. But you, Daniel, Will, and Andrew were credited. And there was also somebody named Sipe, S-I-P-E.
Yeah, Nolan Sipe. He's a top liner who we've done actually a couple songs with at this point. He has a couple credits on both of our full lengths, and he's just awesome. And then the combination of him and Andrew together, they have a great synergy. So it was just a perfect match made in heaven.
Cool. So do you remember when the track was brought to your attention, like when you first heard it, and were you then entrusted to write lyrics and melodies over it, or was there anything in place when the song came to you?
Dude, I remember this day so, so well, because this was at the end of the writing, like the writing time for our first record. And I remember being so burnt out. When we did our second EP right before we had signed, we did it in 9 days. We went in with 0 songs pre-written, and we just 9 days, we would record, write the song and record it in the same day. And two of those days were for drums. And so this time it was a very different experience. We were in like 40 writing sessions, 7 days a week, 12-hour writing sessions, a different writer every single day, just freshly signed to a label, running the gauntlet. And it was exhausting. And it was a little discouraging at times too. I really felt like the creative energy had been sucked out of me, and that it was more of just running a marathon at all times. And we had finished the album. We were like, all right, we have our songs. This is the album. It's done. Shut the door, whatever. And then for whatever reason, it was like, oh, you know, just go in one day with Nolan and Andrew. You guys have a couple more days in LA. It's, you know, free day, whatever. Just why don't you guys just, you know, go and just see if anything happens. If not, it's cool. The album's done. And then we wrote Wasteland that day. So I went in. I remember the studio really well. It was a really cool studio. It was super like dark. And it felt like a lounge. Like it almost felt like, you know what? It actually honestly felt like a strip club. It had like, it was super dark. It had like a bunch of like couches that felt like VIP tables. Like it really did have a very strip club.
If it was in Hollywood or LA, there's a good chance it was a strip club at some point.
Yeah. Maybe like, you know, it's a studio until like 8-9 p.m. and then they start turning it over. But it was awesome. It had just such a good energy about it. And I think it was like, I don't even remember what time of year it was. I think it might have been December. But we went in, and I don't fully remember what existed in the track yet. But I just remember so well, Nolan Sipe had the idea to do the da-da-da. And he like, the way he kind of like threw the top was mm-hmm. like, it was just like, oh, that's so pretty. And we didn't know if it would actually fit with our sound. We were like, is this too sweet? Because we were trying to be, you know, a little bit more of a rock band. We had Running with the Wild Things on that album, which was like, but I don't know. I was so addicted to it. I was like, I want to write this song. And actually, people didn't want it on the record. I remember a lot of pushback to have it go on the record. And
you say,
you say
people like people from Fueled by Ramen, because this track is actually from the 2016 release In Our Bones.
Yes.
And something I noticed, and again, this isn't as important today with albums not being as prominent as they used to be with it being a single driven market. But I noticed this song out of 12 songs was buried at number 9 on the record.
Yeah.
Typically, you don't do that, you know, and this song it has been a fan favorite and been a hit for you guys. Has over 5 million YouTube views.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen the live. I researched the live performances. I mean, this is a bona fide fan favorite.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus because I can't remember who specifically was pushing back. But I remember a vast majority of the voices, whether it was management or label, or even I think Dan and Will might not have been too crazy about it. I don't think most people were kind of just like, about it. And I was like, no, it has to go on the record. It has to go on the record. I was like, this is my favorite song I've ever written. I was like, it has to go on the record. And it ended up on the record. But yeah, like you said, it was kind of just like, it was on the record as an album track, not supposed to be a single or anything. It was just kind of buried in there. And I really pushed for it to get a music video. And I was just like, this is a song. I was like, the fans are going to love this. And I think it was a bit of a risk because it did have a little bit of a, we rock it up a lot when we play it live, but in the actual track, it has like a very EDM structure to it. It has that build and the drop and not like a traditional chorus at all. And it was definitely a risk for our first album, especially on the label, which is why I don't think the label would have taken a risk pushing it as a single. But it was like an immediate fan favorite, like you said. We've closed with that song either at the end of the regular set or at the end of the encore so many times since then. I think it's really rare. I don't even remember if there's a time that we haven't closed with Wasteland, even either at the end of their full set or at the end of the encore set, because it's just a fan favorite and it always just feels like an electric moment.
Good for you for fighting for it. And we've heard that a lot on this show. We had Rise Against on, and one of their biggest hit is called Savior. And
yeah,
the label, everyone around them was like, no. And it was buried on the record and it became the biggest song of their career. So good for you for fighting for it, because it's obvious that that the fans absolutely love it. And I want to jump into the track now. It's 3 minutes and 25 seconds. There's this 10-second intro, which is this like hypnotic synth part. And at the 9-second mark, right before it kicks in, there's like a reverse cymbal that brings you in, that brings you into that first verse. Remember the structure of the song? I know you said you don't remember it initially coming to you, but did this go through a lot of rewrites, or was this kind of how it was when you got it to Andrew Goldstein and we got it into the studio?
We actually wrote it with Andrew and Nolan. So we like, there was nothing until that day.
We
started from scratch, all five of us. Yeah.
Wow.
There might have been, I don't remember if Andrew or Will might have had like some little idea there. Like I think there was like maybe the guitar riff, that opening like do 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 like little thing. Mm-hmm. But besides that, we built it all that day. So that's how we did both of our albums with our producers, is we actually wrote with them, which is why they're all credited as writers and not just as producers, is because we wrote all day with them.
Do you remember who came up with like the majority of the concept for the lyrics, like the title Wasteland? Where did that come from?
So that one was me, actually. I remember, like I said, it was at the end of the first album writing cycle, and I was so drained and so kind of just so like disillusioned with the music industry, I think. And I was like, this is how people like write music. I was like, this isn't like creating art. This is just taxing. We're just day in and day out writing. And I remember being even more shocked at like, because the writers aren't just doing that for an album. They're doing that 365 days a year. They're just going in and you know, shitting out lyrics, shitting out melodies, and then going on to the next one. And I was like, is there passion in this still? Is there drive? And ultimately I found that, yeah, of course there is. And, you know, those people are just overflowing with creativity where they can do it every single day. But for me, I was just like so drained and so disillusioned. And I remember thinking like, I don't want to fall for any more lies, or I don't want to fall for anything else. I don't want to wake up where all the glitter and glamour and everything that I had dreamed of is just gone, and it's just barren. It's just a wasteland. And so, you know, there's a lot of the references are kind of the druggy type references where it's like, you know, you take the pill and then, you know, everything's kind of candy colored and looks pretty and nice. And then you wake up at the end of it and nothing's what it was. And kind of just saying like, I don't want to swallow that pill. I don't want to wake up in wasteland.
So this is kind of about the disillusionment you were having at the time in the music industry being the wasteland. Well, that's cool.
Cause 100%.
I really thought this was a relationship song, which it is a relationship with how you were having, how you were feeling with the label. But, and I can say with having been in those writing sessions, I've done those before, and it does start to feel mechanical. But mm-hmm. And you don't know how much you learn and how much you grow as a songwriter until weeks, months, years later, when you can reflect, and when you step away from it. And I learned so much. But when you're in the tornado, I hated it. I couldn't stand it. I felt like every bit of creativity was being sucked out of me because it was becoming what I said a moment ago, mechanical. Getting into the first verse, the synth part continues over the programmed drums and the bass here, and we're into verse one.
How I lost my mind. Is this paradise or a darker side? Candy coated lips. You're the sweetest kiss, but a bad trip.
And I'll have you set up these lyrics. Have I lost my mind? Is this paradise or a darker side? Candy coated lips. You're the sweetest kiss, but a bad trip.
Yeah. So like I was saying, very much the druggy references, like if you've ever gone out and done drugs, obviously not me, mom, America's sweetheart, mom, love you, mom. But it's kind of just, it's that thing. It's like, there's those moments where what I was picturing in my head the whole time, I'm like a very like visual person. I always have like a color or an image or something in my head when I'm writing. But you know, when you the scene in the movie when the person's on drugs at the party or the club or something, and everything's kind of blurred and like all the lights are like trailing and everything. That's kind of the imagery that was going on in my head. And it was really that, like, is this paradise or a darker side? Like, it could go either way. I can't tell if I'm exactly where I want to be, if I'm in paradise, if I'm in this amazing place, because, you know, this is all I've dreamed of since I was a little girl, is being in the music industry, being in these writing rooms, being signed to a label, being on tour. Or is this just something that's way, way darker and isn't what it seemed at all?
Again, when I was going through this song, I was like, oh yeah, this has to be about, a love relationship gone awry, which that's why I love breaking down lyrics, because you never know. And it's really cool that it was this abstract and it was about what you were feeling with the music business. Getting into pre-chorus number one, and all the lines with the harmonies on this, they have your lead vocal and your harmony panned pretty hard left and right. And it's cool because when the other lines come in, it hits you right between the eyes, that center vocal. And it's a really neat way that this was mixed. The lyric is changing faces, know the name, but I just can't place it. Slurring phrases, took a step, but I can't retrace it. Tell me, take this, but I don't want to wake up in. And the first third and fifth lines, or all those lines with the harmonies that are panned left and right. That's really cool.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. We welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a diehard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the headbanging begin with the Brutally Delicious podcast.
And then the last line of the pre-chorus, but I don't want to wake up in, that's actually the start of the chorus.
Yeah. It kind of leads into that drop. Yeah. So those lyrics were more that's exactly kind of what you were talking about with the tornado. Is I was kind of in the same thing. The first year, 2 years signed to a label, everything was so different. Everything was just a whirlwind. Even the process of signing to a label, I remember going to a different label, not Fueled by Ramen, and their whole thing, they were a wine and dine label. So instead of, like, you know, meeting them and, you know, showing them what they would do for your band, they're just like, oh, we're just going to take you to really expensive dinners and, like, give you some champagne. And I'm like sitting here and I'm thinking about, like, well, how is this going to help against the current actually do anything? But I just remember being in that whirlwind and meeting so many people. And that was kind of the changing faces, know the name, but I just can't place it. Slurring phrases, took a step, but I can't retrace it. It's just more like, you're just kind of in this, like, complete chaos all the time. So many people passing by, so many faces going by you. I know I've met you. I've met so many people at this point. I can't remember who's who anymore. And I kind of can't figure out how I got here, which is the took a step, but I can't retrace it. And then the tell me, take this was kind of just because everyone has the answer for some reason in the music industry. And the reality of the music industry is no one has the answer. No one knows what's going to actually work at the end of the day. People have bet so much on a song for it to go nowhere. And people have put no faith in a song, no money behind it, just for it to explode. I mean, today, explode on TikTok. You know, no marketing budget, no music video ahead of time, no styling, nothing. Like, none of all of those, the bells, whistles, and things that you put on things, none of that. And it becomes, look at Olivia Rodrigo, biggest artist in the world right now because of a song that blew up on TikTok.
Forever now I drive alone past your street.
Everyone was telling me, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to do. Take this, take this, take this, take this. I have the pill. I have the pill. I have the pill. I'm going to make you famous. I'm going to make you famous. I'm going to make you famous. And I kind of at one point realized, it was like, there's something not right here. No one has answers.
What no one ever realizes is your fans make you famous. Nobody else does. It's the fans that buy the concert tickets, buy the t-shirts, that support you, that follow you on social media these days. And I've always maintained that the fans are who make you, for lack of a better word, a star, you know.
Yeah.
We get into the first chorus, and, you know, something about a chorus, and I use this term, this chorus is very simple. But you're saying what you have to say. There's not a lot lyrically going on, but we come out of that pre-chorus, which is actually, as I said a moment ago, the first line. But I don't want to wake up in your wasteland. And the first two lines here are just single piano notes with the underlying synth and your vocal harmonized. And you say your wasteland again, it's harmonized. And then it's just you alone. I don't want to wake up in your wasteland. And on the third, Your Wasteland, that's when this buildup of a snare drum, this roll comes in. Yeah. And it's like, okay, we're going somewhere. And it keeps building. You say Your Wasteland again. And then the very last line, you say, no, I don't want to wake up in your. And that builds, that drum part, like, builds to this crescendo, like something big or heavy is about to happen. And then it all just bottom falls out.
Then it doesn't. Yeah.
But it was very surprising. I'm like, oh, this is going to go into this huge. Now the big guitars are coming. Nope. It went straight into verse 2.
And that's what's funny, because it's kind of counterintuitive to everything that we've ever been told about songwriting, is like, get to the chorus as fast as possible, get to that big moment as fast as possible. And right when we're building into that moment, because in some ways you could make the argument that there is no chorus. You could make the argument that the Your Wasteland part is a pre-chorus, and that the part before it is just like a B verse. It's yeah, just, you know, yeah, verse A, verse B, pre-chorus. And then it could have been an actual chorus, but then just nothing happens. Everything drops out.
Well, thanks, Chrissy. You're kind of doing my job for me right now. You're you're analyzing this kind of how exactly what I was going to say. This is the chorus, but it felt like it was really building up to something. Was there ever talk of it going somewhere, or was that the idea to kind of have the bottom drop out and go into verse two?
Yeah, I mean, of course. And I think everyone kind of knew that was a bizarre choice to make. And especially because we were, like I said, going more for the rock route on album one. You know, album two, we deviated, went a little bit more pop. We're back on the rock now. But it was one of those things where people were like, you got to give them a chorus. Like, what are you doing? And we in the studio were just like, no, this is good. This is good. Like, this is building that tension, making them wait for it, but like waiting all the way until the bridge essentially for that drop to actually hit is a risky move. It's like, however, like 2 minutes or something into the song, whatever it is. And you're saying like, how are you going to keep people there for that? But once it pays off, it feels so good. And once it pays off live, it feels 100 times better than even the recorded version. That drop feels massive. I get butterflies every time we play it to this day. And there are so many songs that you become numb to, that you just play over and over and over, and they're so deeply ingrained in your muscle memory. And even though you love them, it just kind of, it's muscle memory at that point. You know it. It's like breathing or walking or riding a bike for anything else. This song is just, it always feels special to me. It always makes me feel like I'm falling in love.
Well, that's cool. Getting into verse number two here, I'll read the lyric and have you break this one down. Twisted fantasy in your ecstasy. You're no good for me. Just behind the wall. It's not a dream at all. It's a free fall. And on free fall, there's this cool delay they have on your voice. I really, really like whatever happens there. It's a cool moment.
Yeah.
Twisted fantasy in your ecstasy. You're no good for me. Just behind the wall. It's not a dream at all. It's a free fall.
So also the cool part too is at the end of the chorus, it goes, no, I don't want to wake up in your twisted fantasy. Like, so it kind of drops it. Like that line continues out of the chorus in a way, which I thought, instead of saying, I don't want to wake up in your wasteland, it goes, twisted fantasy,
which is cool, because out of the pre-chorus you're getting that line that sets up the chorus, and now out of the chorus you're getting the line that sets up the verse.
Yeah, so it's basically saying, I don't want to wake up in your twisted fantasy. Like, this is your fantasy, not mine. And then the just behind the wall bit, it's very much like Wizard of Oz, man behind the curtain. It's like, you think Oz is so great and powerful, we think the record labels and the execs and all these people, when you're young, you're like, these people know, you know, these are the people that make you famous. And then once you get into it, you're kind of just like, it is very man behind the curtain. And don't get me wrong, I love the head of our label, Mike Easterlin. I love him. He's like a father figure to me. He has been there for me through thick and thin. So like, I would never, ever in any way bash like people's character. But I just think that when you're young, you grow up idolizing record labels when you want to be in a band, especially labels like Fueled by Ramen that had such like, and like the Hopeless Records. If you grew up a scene kid, like you grew up idolizing these labels because they housed every band, you know, everyone was either on Hopeless, Fearless, Fueled By, all of those records had such record labels had such strong identities to them. It's not like, you know, you could be on like Capitol Records. It's not the same thing. It's just kind of like, oh, it's a big label. Whatever.
That was my first label. And I agree.
There you go. Yeah. But it's not like you. So like, if I grew up a Less Than Jake fan, I'm not like so much at like Capitol Records fan, but people like Fueled by Ramen had fans. Hopeless had fans. If Fearless like, had fans.
Yeah. If you liked the, if you liked the, you liked the label, you liked the catalog, you like what was on the label. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Fat Records is another one of those labels that I grew up on that, definitely if you could count on, if the label released something, 90% chance you were going to like what was on the label.
Yeah. So you grew up idolizing this as a kid. And I think like, as I got older, I was like, it is a man behind the curtain thing. No one has the right answers, you know? And at the end of the day, it's what you said. It is the fans. What those labels did right is by creating that culture, the fans paid attention to the new signees, which a lot of other labels didn't have. So they did that right. But I think it's just, it's super naive as a kid growing up thinking like, I gotta meet the guy in the suit who's gonna hand me a business card and be like, call me kid, I'm gonna make you famous.
Yeah, it doesn't always work that way, as you know. The pre-chorus number two is the same as pre-chorus one. The harmonies are panned off the same. It's pretty much the same as pre-chorus one. I'll read the lyric again. Changing faces, know the name, but I just can't place it. Slurring phrases, took a step, but I can't retrace it. Tell me, take this, but I don't want to wake up in. And because the chorus is so simplistic in nature of not having much lyrics beyond your wasteland and I don't want to wake up in, was there any talk here that you remember of maybe changing the pre-chorus here and adding some different lyrics here? Or was it just always the same?
Definitely. I mean, if you like look at the lyrics, I have them up on the side as well. Like if you look at the lyrics of this song, it's like a thin column of lyrics. Like there's very few lines that even are longer than 6-7 words.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely remember that conversation being like, oh, should we add something new here? Like, you know, should we add more lyrics, more visuals, more analogies? But the song was so abstract in general, and, you know, it's very vague. It's all a feeling of like, just, I don't know. It's meant to make you feel something. It's not supposed to be overly specific. I think at that point, if you add more kind of vague analogies in there, you're just going for it to show off what you can do. You're just like, let me show you how many analogies I can come up with. We had already kind of done the druggy references and made it feel very trippy and that thing. And it's like, I don't want to beat a dead horse. Like you know what I'm saying. And to me, that's the most important thing is like, if the point came across, there's no point in continuing to explain it.
Yeah. I'll be the first one to tell you if there's not enough there or if there's too much. And I think that this is perfect the way that it is. I don't think you needed any more information there. We get into chorus number two, which this chorus is pretty much the same as chorus one. That drum buildup comes in halfway through. And here at the end, when you say, no, I don't want to wake up in your, now we're in the bridge. Totally
yeah.
Different. Now the big drums come in, the big crash cymbals happening over a new drum groove and a new synth pattern. And there's these vocals that come in
yeah.
here, that come out of nowhere. It's like, oh, what's that? And in between that, you're saying, I don't want to wake up in your, and then the four oohs, the backing vocals, come back in. I always laugh at my writing here. Ooh, 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 ooh. But the oohs are there. And then this next part is really interesting because I wrote that this is a continuation of the bridge, but it's almost like a third pre-chorus because you're getting in a lot of the, you know, a lot of the same lyrics as the pre-chorus.
Yeah.
Changing faces. Slurring phrases. Nothing changes.
It's the same lyrics without the middle parts of the first two lines. You know, it's just changing faces, slurring phrases, nothing changes, and then goes into that last chorus, which is finally like the chorus that really pays off too.
Do you know, I've been doing this over a year now, this podcast. You're the first person ever to read the lyrics back to me. I always read them. Thank you.
I'm also like lyrics are my favorite thing in the world. So like, I'm like, when I listen to a song for the first time, I Google the lyrics and read the lyrics as I'm listening to the song. Like
that's awesome.
such, yeah, I don't think a lot of, I don't think the average person maybe does that.
No, because it kind of freaks, artists out when like, they're like, I've never heard my lyrics read back to me. This, like, they kind of hits them. And I don't know if anybody else has actually put the lyrics up to read them like you have too. That's really cool. You've done that. So you have some reference, because I have a heck of a time. Remember, I can sing my lyrics, like you said earlier, the muscle memory, I can spit them out. But if I were to think about my lyric verse one, verse two, I probably couldn't recite 90% of our songs. But
I agree.
In this continuation of a bridge, so thank you for helping me. There's single piano notes that happen here with these really cool pre-delayed vocals. They're kind of swirling around, and there's some interesting new synth sounds that we haven't heard in the track yet that come on this, what I'm calling the continuation of the bridge, almost like a third pre-chorus. And you read some of the lyrics. I'll read the whole thing here. Changing faces, slurring phrases, nothing changes, in your waist, I don't want to wake up in. And that last line there is just sung by you alone. And it just gives this like personal touch feeling before, boom, you're in chorus three. And now the full band is in for the first time. It's no longer just you and the synth and the vocal on the first two lines. The full band's in. And for the first time, the big guitars are in here. Now you got the big stereo guitars. That's cool. And is that's kind of what you're talking about here. The end of the song just builds to this.
Finally pays off. Yeah. They get like a little taste of it in the bridge, because, you know, there is, you know, more of a fullness there. But then that last chorus is really what hits. And it makes it so worth it, because I think what's difficult to do, and it's super rare that I'll compliment myself, but it wasn't just me, obviously, it was the whole squad together. But I think one thing that we did really well on this song that is difficult to do is that we maintained tension building throughout the whole song and like never let the release valve off. So once you did finally get to that, it actually does pay off, as opposed to just being like, why did they wait so fucking long to get to this final chorus? You know, having that moment where we're just about to give it to you at the end of that first chorus, and then it kind of drops back into that second verse. And that's my favorite thing, because live, you feel it. You feel that everyone's been waiting. You can feel it, that it's just been like slowly building up in everyone in the audience, that everybody's been waiting for this moment to just fully let go and lose their shit. Me too. At that point, I'm like, I'm ready for it. I'm ramping up. I've done it 1,000 times. I know it's coming, but still every single time, the next time, like when it finally happens, it's just like, it feels euphoric. It's awesome.
Well, and the song's only 3 minutes and 25 seconds. So it's not like it's this super, super long 6 minute song that takes forever to get somewhere. You know, it happens. Yeah. It feels like it happens pretty quickly, but yeah, I think that tension, I think that's what makes this song special. Because, and it's funny, when these guitars came in, I actually had to go back when I first heard them and listen to the first and second chorus and say, wait, were the guitars there buried back somewhere? No, they're not there at all. They don't come into the third chorus. And the third chorus, the lyrical structure is all the same. Your wasteland, I don't want to wake up in your wasteland. No, I don't want to wake up in your wasteland. And then what I'm calling the post chorus, this even gets heavier. Now it goes halftime.
Yeah.
And it's great, because the big crash cymbal comes back in. Everything gets super, super loud here. And it's kind of like the kitchen sink moment, I call it. Everything is now thrown in. The lyric is changing faces. And then at the same time, you're saying in your wasteland, those four oohs, ooh, 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 backing vocals are also there during that part, which is cool. Then you say slurring phrases. I don't want to wake up in your, and then you say nothing changes. And after that, the four oohs come back. Mm-hmm. And around this time, those staccato delayed synth sounds from the second half of the bridge, they come back for the post-chorus.
Yeah.
Those weird, like, who is that something Andrew came up with? I've always wondered about sounds like that. Does the producer sit around and go through a bank of 1,000 sounds and goes, that's the one, or do they have something in mind that they've created? Or do you remember if that was a created sound or something was on in a keyboard bank somewhere?
I'm going to assume that was in a bank because... He does
it's a cool
he has
sound.
Like he has crazy banks, and he would whip sounds out all the time, and it would just be like, oh, I think this would be the vibe. But yeah, between him and my drummer Will, they're both amazing producers, and they both are kind of Andrew specifically has like just like a massive sound bank at the time, and he would always just bring out these crazy awesome sounds that really shaped the personality of the track. So yeah, I assume it was in the sound bank, but everything, the whole song was recorded and built in one day. There was no post-production. I mean, there was drums recorded. That was it. Like we're recorded later, I think. I don't even know. It actually might not have even been live drums at this point. I can't actually remember.
It all sounds programmed to me. The only thing
I think it was programmed.
Yeah, I think the only thing maybe was maybe the cymbals may have been overdubbed, those big crash cymbals. I don't know if that was because those sound real to me. But you used a word a moment ago. You said just the personality and this. Everything here, I called it the kitchen sink moment. There's a lot of personality that's going on here with the layers of the synth, and those sounds are really cool. The last line here, you say in your waist, and I don't want to wake up. And wake up is sung alone by yourself, and it ends with just a single synth key at the same time you say that, and the track's done.
Yeah.
And so this was done, as you said, kind of in a day, and you kind of whipped it together. And you believed in the song initially. When did the other guys get on board? Andrew and everybody that were like, okay, we got something here.
I think Andrew and Nolan definitely believed it. You know, they were writing on it. I think, you know, once we started playing it live, obviously the fan reaction, once the album dropped, everybody was like, oh my God, Wasteland. Oh my God, Wasteland. It was like 90% of the song titles that were shouted out when the full album dropped were Wasteland.
Did you say I told you so to your band members?
Oh, I say it once a month. I say it all the time. I never forget it.
Good. Give it to them. Stick it to them.
I don't have like, you know, I'm the only girl in this operation a lot of the time. We actually have some women on our management team now, which is awesome. And like, it's just, you know, there's some women at our label, but for a vast majority of the time we had like a male manager, male bandmates, all male touring crew. So
you had your I told you moment.
I needed it. You know, I was waiting for it. I was like, I need one. Give me one. And I am the less musically talented of the group. It's just a reality. I just don't know as much. I don't know about as much about producing. I don't know as much about any particular instrument. I am mostly emotion and lyrics and top line, you know, and melody. And that's my thing. It's more emotional and all based on feeling, and it's way less technical. So there's a lot of times where I'm just, you know, not right, and I'm okay with that. This was the moment where I was like, there we go. I know what I'm talking about. And it, you know, going back to what you said about the fans, and the fans are the ones that make you famous. That is so true, because when we wrote the song, I was like, our fans will love this. I know that they will love this song. And that was what made me push so hard for it, is because I was like, I know they'll connect to this.
Yeah. Well, give yourself a little more credit. You know more than I think you're giving yourself credit for. You're very intelligent when it comes to music. And I want to thank you for sitting in today and taking the time to be on the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, you got a new record coming out July 23rd called Fever. And if there's anything else you'd like to leave the listeners with at this point, let us have it.
Yeah, it's just that our latest song, Again and Again, it just came out, and then Fever comes out. But remember, guys, that Fever is only the first half. It's going to be Fever blank. And I love seeing everybody's guesses online about what they think the second word is. And actually, a bunch of people have already gotten it. I won't tell you if you get it right, but I'd love to see your guesses. So
I know what it is. It's blister.
Fever blister. Yeah.
No, that's not it. Well, that's cool. Any touring plans coming up for the band?
Yes, we are actually announcing those. I think really soon. I think the announce is coming sometime in July. So you'll be hearing from us again really soon for the first time in like 2 years, which is awesome.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on all your success. And again, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song via MP3 only and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured band is Winterhaven. They're a four-piece pop-punk band from Flagstaff, Arizona, with Jack Hernandez on lead vocals and rhythm guitar, Brendan Jeffrich on lead guitar, Colton Henderson on bass, and Nick Shira on drums and vocals. Here's a snippet of their song, Ted Cruz.
Never said I'd listen when you said you're all I got. Never giving consequences any sort of thought. Never should have listened when I told you to come in. Cause now I've grown addicted to a different kind of sin. Why can't you see what I'm trying to tell you? Something's wrong with me. How I think isn't normal.
The Rap with Chris and Chris.
Subject matter wise, I thought this was pretty interesting, especially when Chrissy brought up that thought that you have when you're a young band or a young solo artist that you're going to sign to a record label and that's going to be the solution to everything. And all of a sudden you're going to become a star. You kind of have this idea when you're younger that that's the way things work. And I didn't know so much if newer artists still thought that way. I know that growing up, we thought that way. You signed to a label and things are going to happen, man. But apparently, Chrissy, being a younger artist, also experienced that.
Yeah, you know, and I had seen it from before even getting signed to our first major label, Capitol, which is funny. She used that as a reference in the episode. It made me laugh a little bit. But I had seen a lot of bands get money put into them and fail. You know, I remember All getting signed to Interscope and just, you know, things just didn't, just because you're on a major doesn't mean you're going to sell a million records, but your chances, definitely back then were better than not being, you know, at least you had your foot in the door. But I do know that, I'll never forget when we first got signed to Capitol, the president at the time, Gary Gersh, he had signed a band called Triple Fast Action out of Chicago. He loved this band. He would go into marketing meetings and just try to fire up the label. Push this band. They put millions of dollars into Triple Fast Action. I think the band sold 10,000 records, roughly. They couldn't break. And here she is, and it's funny having her talk about getting wined and dined by the suits at Fuel by Ramen. I remember that. I remember Capitol Records taking us to Dodgers baseball games and taking us to Magic Mountain theme park and to these expensive dinners and being enamored by it. But at the same time, we always kind of had a head about us, kind of like knew that this was a lot of pomp and circumstance that was going on, that, you know, just because we're on a major doesn't mean we're going to sell 2 million records.
Right, right. And I think in her example, she was saying that it was some other label that was trying to wine and dine them, but maybe Fueled by Ramen is more like the, here's what we're going to do. We're going to lay it out for you. And that makes sense from what I've always known of FBR. And I also thought it was interesting, at the same time, she was referencing, just as you and I have talked about, that the game has changed. Like, bands and artists can blow up because of TikTok and things like that, things on the internet. And if you're not a part of that, if you're like, nah, man, that's not for me or whatever, you're going to get left behind. Whether you like it or not, you're going to get left behind if you're not paying attention to the way that people are consuming and discovering new bands and things like that. So, you know, it's kind of like, I remember the dawn of streaming and the dawn of iTunes and stuff. Like, you could have been like, nah, man, we're just going to sell CDs, and you would have got left behind.
You would have. And, you know, YouTube, the word YouTube, or the phrase YouTube sensation, that was kind of the first platform that came along where, yeah, you were getting these people that are getting 5, 10, 15, 20 million hits on a video that was going viral, and they were starting to get advertisers that were coming around, and they became a YouTube sensation. And that, of course, has now moved on to, as you said, TikTok and all these other platforms. That was one of the things that I always tried to do, our band always tried to do, was be forward thinkers and keep up with the technology and not just kind of, you know, turn a blind eye to it and kind of try to pay attention to it. Even though, you know, I'm a middle-aged guy, to look at something like TikTok, it seems like it's so foreign, but it's such a useful tool.
It's easy to get disheartened by the changing times and things, but if you want to be relevant, you can't. You can't get disheartened. You got to be like, okay, I got to learn how to use TikTok, or I got to learn how to use whatever the next thing is after that. You
right,
know?
And things are changing now probably faster than they ever have. It seems like every month there's something new. The other thing I thought that was really interesting, Chris, was that while referencing all that we're talking about with being disillusioned with the labels and all this, that's what the song Wasteland is about.
Yeah. And when it comes to the song itself, I thought an interesting thing about this song is like that anti-climax. You know, there's a couple of those where you feel like it's going to explode, you're going to have this big thing, and then it drops off.
Yeah.
And it's a cool use of dynamics that makes an impact in such a different type of way than you might be used to, especially in rock music. You're always waiting for that big chorus. If you could wait like they did in this song, and just like she said, it hits that much harder and the drop feels massive, is the way she put it. And it pays off and it feels good. I love that she said that the song always makes her feel like she's falling in love when she performs it live. That's a cool way of describing that feeling on stage when you're having that connection with the audience, and also just the song, the music itself, is just making you feel so good.
Well, I think that's what makes the song unique is, you know, after that first chorus, we're calling it, if, you know, it feels like it's ramping up, that snare drum's going, if it would have launched into something, this might have just been another song. It's that tension that keeps you to the pretty much the 2 minute mark, the last minute of this song, that as she talks about, that's where it explodes. And I always go, it's important when I'm doing these episodes, I always go and look at live performances of the song. I've always thought of things in a live setting because Les and Jake's always been a live band, and I always go and watch the live videos, and man, when this song hits at the end, the audience loses it.
I also thought that it was cool to hear Chrissy talk about lyrics being her favorite thing in the world, because she's got a great voice and she's got awesome melodies. But then, so I would have guessed that she was, you know, we tend to lean as melody people or lyric people. Of course, we got to be both of those things. But I wouldn't have guessed that she was a lyric obsessed person. You know, and I don't know why. I would assume that she'd have been like you and I. I think that we're both melody people, right?
Yeah, well, and she was very humble at the end. She says, you know, I don't know as much as the rest of these guys. And I told her, I don't think she gives herself enough credit. She was pretty in depth here. You know, we were talking about different sounds coming in and the harmonies being panned, and she gets it. You know, I don't think she gives herself enough credit.
Not to mention the fact that she was the person who knew that this song would be a hit among their fans. It would have been a fan favorite. And maybe it didn't sound like anyone else. Maybe some other people were like, I don't know. But it sounded like she was the person with the vision on this song, and she was right.
Yeah, you know, it was just, as we've heard on this show, it was another album track buried at number 9 out of 12, and it's become the signature song, one of the signature songs for this band, definitely from this record.
Yeah, man, like I always say, which I feel like this is becoming my catchphrase, but that was another great episode.
Well, yeah, man, that was a really fun episode. And I'd like to bring up this month's fundraiser for July. It's for Star Ovarian Cancer Foundation. You can head over to ChrisDemakesADifference.com and give anything, $1, $5, $10. It goes a long way. And we've featured cancer fundraisers a number of times on the podcast just due to the fact that cancer affects so many people. So again, please head over to ChrisDemakesADifference.com and chip in whatever you can. We really appreciate it. it.
We absolutely do appreciate it, as do all the foundations and organizations that we fundraise for on here. So yeah, if you can go to chrisdemakesadifference.com and you can help out some ovarian cancer research this month, which you'd be hard-pressed to find a better fundraiser than that. And Chris, what else we got going on? You still writing custom songs, or did you give that up?
I certainly am, and if you'd like to hear a little bit of my work, Chris is going to roll the most ridiculous thing you've heard in a while right now.
I can write you a ska song, or maybe a punk song, a punk song. I want to write you a punk song, a punk song. I want to write you a mid-tempo rock song, something you can sing along or scream. Metal. I lost my job, my tractor died, my wife took off with another man.
Guess who back with the post-modern rap? Chilling with the homies, ain't taking no crap.
Actually, you don't want to hear me rap. Pick any other style, trust me.
I could even write a ballad for your anniversary or your birthday.
Looking for a voiceover, jingle, or music for your business, podcast, or TV show? Well, look no further. I'm your guy.
Yeah, and if you'd like your very own custom song for you, that special someone, or just yourself, it could even be a treat for yourself, hit me up for more info at chrisdemakes@gmail.com. And if you don't mind, give me a follow on Instagram at @lessthanchrisd. I'd really appreciate that.
I'm following you.
I know you are.
I will follow you into the dark.
So the other thing is that we've been talking about a lot lately, because it's been a lot of fun doing these after party episodes, Chris. We have a VIP program called Supporting Cast, which you could find over at chrisdemakes.com. It'll take you right there. We got different tiered programs. We got a bunch of merchandise in the store. We got a really cool pullover hoodie and a t-shirt, and they're really comfortable, and they're not cheap, and they look good. So
Yeah, they are high quality. It's actually a zip up, Chris. It's a zip up. I know you.
It's a zip up.
I know you called it a pullover. Maybe someday we'll have pullovers too. But for now, it's a zip up hoodie with the Krista Makes a Podcast logo on it, and it's comfy as hell. And and if you join the supporting cast, you're helping out your buds. You help us continue making this podcast and bringing you amazing episodes like this week's episode with Chrissy from Against the Current, which was incredible.
Yeah, I want to thank Chrissy Costanza from Against the Current for sitting in on the podcast this week. That was a lot of fun, and we'll see you next week.
Ready for a head-bangingly good time? Dive into the world of heavy metal with the Brutally Delicious podcast. Here, we don't just talk music. We welcome you into our heavy metal family. Join us for candid chats with legends and rising stars. We go beyond the typical interviews, exploring raw emotions and the life-altering impact of heavy metal. So whether you're a diehard metalhead or just curious, join our family and let the headbanging begin with the Brutally Delicious podcast.
Hey you, did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020'd? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020'd, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020'd.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.